us now, Gareth Hughes and Tim Hurdle, our political commentators today. Kia ora, gents. Thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah, kia ora, morena.
Good morning.
Morning, Tim. Tim is a former National Party senior advisor. He was the National Party campaign director in 2020. He's a director of several companies, including Museum Street Strategies, a public affairs firm. Gareth Hughes is a former Green MP and now works for the Wellbeing Economy Alliance, Aotearoa. Don't think you're connected. You're not signed up with the party anymore,
no,
are you?
No, not a member anymore.
All right. OK, budget prep. I want to start with this because it's still a month, more than a month away. It's end of May, but there is a process that you go through in order to get a budget signed off and agreed. And I think the end of this month might be a fairly critical time for that. A lot of comments on how spare the budget policy statement was when the finance minister brought that out a few days back, Tim. Is this three-part coalition going pretty hard over this, do you think?
Yeah, I think this is a big challenge of trying to weigh up three quite different priorities and perspectives and meld that into one. So effectively you have to find a common ground between three distinct groups. That always happens anyway, I guess, around a cabinet table about different people having different views. But this is very, very clear. These people are in different political parties. So now they have to balance those priorities and allocate the money, and the money isn't there to make problems go away. So that means those trade-offs are pretty sharp. And with the economy on the downturn, there's a lot of pressures on spending from inflation and also just from things like higher welfare payments that come from having a downturn. So overall, it's a pretty difficult budget to put together.
Some commentators pulling out a part of Winston Peters' State of the Nation speech last week. There was a lot of focus on some other headlines, but that was where he revealed what the size of what he perceived the shortfall to be. And has also sort of made a couple of comments that people have interpreted as him playing hardball. You know, when might this be resolved? Oh, 30th April. Probably not that unusual for Mr. Peters to be publicly playing hardball, though.
No, he's pretty good at the brinkmanship, as we saw with the coalition negotiations, and we've seen over the past decades. He knows how to sort of run it up to the line to try and get the maximum benefit from for his position. So this is what he does very well.
Well, I mean, Tim's absolutely right. This is an incredibly difficult budget to put together. They've already got a bit of an extension, pushing it right out to the end of May for the actual budget date. And it's pretty clear from the statements that Nicola Willis, Winston Peters and others have made that big decisions are still outstanding. It was a difficult kettle of fish to deliver in the first place, given that growth is slowing, so there's less revenue coming in. We saw, you know, big gaps emerge in National's original budget forecast that they went so strong on during the election campaign, saying they knew their numbers, they knew they were going to deliver this, with things like the foreign buyer ban, the app tax. You know, there's a huge hole and they've got to make that up somehow. We've already seen the deficit being pushed out, I think, to 28-29. That means increased
borrowing. Can't guarantee a surplus after that either.
No, that's right. It's incredibly tight, marginal. So, and then I guess on the politics, right, you know, this is New Zealand First point of maximum leverage. Once the decisions are made, it's baked into the budget. That's done and dusted. So I'm sure he'll be pushing for every single, you know, scrap.
We saw ACT give way on a minor matter on the landlord's return of interest deductibility. But this isn't just about what the smaller parties get with respect to their coalition agreements. This is about whether that can all add up, and the tax package, right? And we've already talked about whether there's wriggle room for National to stagger its tax package more, although it still seems to be talking pretty hard out about substantial tax moves this budget. I saw one commentator saying Winston Peters could just refuse to vote for the tax cuts. Well, a budget's a confidence issue, so I don't think that would happen in the House.
That would blow up the government.
I mean, it would blow up the government, but I wonder if they were speaking a bit more metaphorically and saying just refuse to do it in these talks.
Well, I'm sure, you know, that's always the maximum threat. That's implicit or explicit. I doubt it's explicit, but that is always the threat that a minor party has. And you've got to remember that they chose not to be in confidence and supply. They're in a full coalition. So given this is the first full coalition government we've had with three parties, it will be more difficult. They do have maximum leverage at this point in time. But it's interesting that Nicola Willis really staked her career on delivering tax cuts.
Yep.
And now you've got even the New Zealand Initiative calling not advancing tax cuts because they think we need to be focusing on the deficit.
Tim, on that question, I mean, you couldn't vote against it in a formal setting, because that would literally collapse the government, right? But it's a question of how far Mr. Peters might push that line in the run-up to the budget being signed off. Or is this just his way, again, of saying, don't think we are going to give on any of what we want in order to enable this? What's your take?
I think it's probably a reflection that Winston Peters is usually quite a fiscal conservative. He will be aware of the overall macroeconomic position, and some of those, as you alluded to, the structural deficit issue is putting a lot of pressure on this budget to actually try and create a story about how New Zealand's going to get back into surplus, and that is important because of our credit rating and things like that. So Peters will be awake to those bigger problems. The most expensive thing and probably the most discretionary thing are those tax cuts. He would argue that, I suppose, versus some of his expenditure proposals. So everything's a challenge of balancing off that. I'm not quite sure. It's always pretty hard to read where Winston's going with things. So
the other thing is the realities of what you said you could afford back in the election campaign, and everyone said actually you can't. That reality's coming home, but also the realities of now you're in government. So you're making these promises for police. I mean, Mr. Peters wants those 500 extra police delivered in 2 years, but also you've got the police saying we're not accepting this pay deal. We know something like, I think, 50 police officers, I was reading this thanks to the Herald, have had security checks done by Australian police. That's the best indicator we've got that they're not just talking about going, but they are going, right? And then you've got the GPs crisis. You've got GPs taking out mortgages, and you've got big practices closing, it feels like, just about by the week. So it's that operational budget as well, Gareth.
Oh, absolutely. And look, you know, Health New Zealand has just posted a $1 billion deficit. There's huge infrastructure, you know, deficits in this country. Every day, it feels, there's another cut or slashing of public servants in this country. So there's huge pressures building up. And remember, the public service is operating in an inflationary environment as well. So a 6.5% to 7.5% reduction in an inflationary environment is a much larger cut to the real services. So, you know, Winston Peters historically hasn't been a slash and burn politician. You know, he's actually, you know, his rhetoric has been around looking after people. And so that is jarring against ACT.
So we've talked about him a bit. Let's talk about Nicola Willis and the situation she's in, Tim. Not only did she say, I'll resign if I don't deliver the tax cuts, she's got some wriggle room on how that's phased, but she's got her own political credibility to stick to here as well, yes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is the job. The Minister of Finance is probably it's always a pretty important job and a difficult job, but this is probably the crucial thing to making the government succeed, because trying to get all these multiple pressures into one budget is quite a challenge. I know that she'll be working very, very hard to do that, and the Treasury will be under a lot of pressure to try and pull this together, but this is crucial. And then it will come into... the thing is, once it's down on paper, you've then got to go out and sell it. So it's not not necessarily a given that everybody will accept what you put up. So there's a lot of pressure on here.
Okay, let's have a look. The PM's announced the next 100 days to-do list. A lot of talk about his having a CEO style and to this role, and, you know, wanting KPIs ticked off, etc. Was there anything in that surprised you, Gareth, and we'll use it as a way to pull out some of the things that are now about to be implemented? There was a lot of repeal happening in the first 100 days, but what did you pull out of the next 100 days?
Well, I mean, the first thing that's apparent is the word salad and the language used. You know, we're going to raise the energy when it comes to international negotiation. We're going to go through decision gates. We're going to take decisions as a number of the 36 points. So I think, you know, this is this corporate approach, which has been criticised quite roundly by Labour and the Greens, saying the country isn't a company and shouldn't be governed like that. However, I think this sort of approach, and Luxon really is sort of embracing the CEO, his history, his CEO brand. And look, it's going to fall totally flat for some people. They won't want a bar of it. For other people, it's, you know, probably quite appealing and attractive. And it is his strong suit. So I can see why he's leaning into it. But gosh, this language is really jarring.
All right.
When you look at the substance, I mean, this is all about them setting milestones, which in a sense it's going to be incredibly difficult to fail. It's self-imposed measures and targets. Again, it's good politics in the sense that they're setting the agenda. Of course, they're going to be ticks in the columns and they'll be able able to counter that narrative that the previous government had of not delivering things. So they're clearly addressing that. But is it really meaningful? Is it really substantive decisions? No, not really.
One or two working groups set up as well, Tim, for perhaps not as many as the previous government in its first term, that's for sure. But what else are you seeing out of the next 100 days that actually looked like it had some new initiatives now being legislated for or actually on the move?
I think that's part of the problem is the list is really, as Gareth says, the politics rather than any operational delivery or policy program. I think there is a lot of challenges for the government to try and advance legislation. Legislation, you don't just pull it together in 30 minutes. We had to do it with the earthquake recovery legislation in a few days, in a week, but most things as complex as what they're talking about can take over a year. That's even before the working group's report get finished. So it's very hard to mesh the action plan style with actually how a government operates over a year.
Well, so one stark example is the Three Waters stuff, and its policy going into the election was one, repeal Labor's previous policy, formerly known as Three Waters, and then second, deliver its own local water done well. But it's pretty much at the beginning of local water done well. Has there been any movement on that, Tim?
No, and it's very much very similar to the last government's policy, just with a few tweaks on the outsides. It really looks like they're almost starting with a blank sheet of paper because they haven't addressed the fundamental question of which was the argument that underlied the reform, which was how do you get the councils the ability to fund the new assets.
And there's balance sheet really separation.
This infamous balance sheet separation concept, which is, you can't own something and
pretend you don't owe money on it.
Sitting off to the side. Pretend you don't own it. Yeah. It's like you can't have the security if you don't own it. So it kind of gets very complicated very quickly about explaining that.
So what have we seen? We've just seen Cabinet has agreed on key steps to implement this, local water done well, the government's plan for financially sustainable local delivery, delivered water infrastructure, etc. But we're not really seeing any detail. What are the issues?
Well, there's a working group.
There's a working group. What are the issues that will arise? And some of them will be what the former government faced, although I didn't talk about it much. What are some of the key issues? Keep going for a moment, and Tim, and then I'll come back to you, Gareth. Issues this is going to lead into.
Well, so it falls into some issues over treaty claims over the ownership of water and the right of iwi to control those water sources and who owns the water. It's an argument we haven't heard for a while because we've sort of got caught up in other things, but they are very complicated and it could get tied up in quite heavy legal action. There is a problem that if the councils own their treatment stations and the plants, but they all have very high levels of debt on their balance sheets. So to build new assets and new pipes, they'd need to borrow more to pay for it. But they don't have the capacity, and trying to find a way that those assets can be owned and controlled by the councils but not owned and controlled is the fundamental question. So there's also huge issues about scale. Water schemes are diverse. There's from people having a bore in their backyard through to hundreds of thousands of people being serviced in Auckland off of one dam. And meshing all those systems together and ensuring that the adequate treatment is a really big and complicated problem.
Gareth, it was the risk of the question, unresolved question of the nature and extent of Māori interest in fresh water that led Labor to go the co-governance route. Its leader admitted right on the eve of the election and subsequently they did not do enough to explain the reason for that situation. They had their own plan for getting balance sheet separation by taking ownership away from the councils and into these new entities. This is a case now of the new government coming up against the same problems.
Oh, that's it exactly. And the treaty interests don't disappear just because you don't wish them to be relevant. They're still there. That will still play a role. And, it's quite telling that, Tim says that it feels like they're starting with a blank piece of paper. They've had plenty of time to actually work on these solutions. And ironically, with these water service delivery plans, there's still the ability for central government to come in and effectively dictate to local councils what they do with their assets or, in effect, take them over. So that sort of localism angle, which they've campaigned on so strongly, you know, is ringing a bit hollow. But I guess, you know, also when you look at this, you know, new 100-day, this new quarterly plan, we can see quite a strong theme emerging. It's almost like neoliberalism on steroids and attacking the environment. So you've got the fast-track legislation. We've just seen another review of methane coming through with their independent working group, the significant natural areas, the freshwater rules. This theme that we need to continue to grow the economy as fast as humanly possible, that we need to act in service to the economy is first and foremost, no matter what the opposition, be it Māori, the environment or communities. So it's
I know what they'd say. They'd say we were elected to, which is the line that has been kept coming out when there are opposition to some of these moves. Let's look at some of the other things that are beginning to emerge out of the 100 days list, or just as things pick up pace. Three strikes law. This will be Act, of course, undoubtedly part of its deal, I imagine. Three strikes law set for controversial comebacks, is this headline. Local referendums for Māori wards ahead of next election. So this says, this interprets what councils can go back and think whether they want to continue the Māori wards. Are we, again, just starting to see an agenda, the one that the three parties campaigned on, actually beginning?
Oh, of course, you know, it is what it says on the tin, and they're simply delivering it. And, you know, I guess they're being quite clear with their communication exactly what they're planning to do. But again, it kind of rings hollow in the sense that they went to the campaign talking about localism, powering local regions. Now you have Local Government New Zealand, you know, coming out very strongly against the Māori ward referendums, which is reducing the ability of local councils to make these decisions. Likewise, the coalition agreement had, you know, lots of mentions to evidence-based policy. That there's no evidence that three strikes laws work. In fact, the government can't even point to that evidence, yet they're still rolling it out. So saying one thing, but delivering another.
Well, delivering what they signed up to in the coalition agreements, Tim. And is yeah, there, and, well, go ahead.
And they're delivering on what the people wanted, which was, there was a concern that law and order and crime and justice issues were going soft, that people were getting away with violent acts, that gangs were on the rise, and that was very clearly a concern at the last election. And sometimes it might not necessarily meet the Liberal test, but at the end of the day, people want this to happen because they want to see some signs that there is going to be a tougher line on law and order.
And there's a very real risk for National here, however, that they're being pulled to the extremes by both ACT and New Zealand First, who are almost in an arms race or a competition to out anti-woke the other. And you saw that with the 36 points that ACT was claiming credit for more than half of the points. So they're in competition behind the scenes. This is also what will be happening with the budget negotiations, again behind the scenes. And the risk for National is that they get trapped down this, not the largest centrist, more moderate party. They'll be identified with these extreme policies.
But strategically, they'll want to get all of that coalition agreement stuff done, will they not, Tim, as soon as possible, precisely to move on from that situation?
Yeah, I think they will. But, I mean, I think the other thing that strikes me is that how much the discussion is happening. Gareth talks about that competition, but there's one big party that's not even in the conversation, which is the Labour Party. The conversation is about definitely doing these policy moves and making these things happen. It's just a question of what degree that they're going to happen, and the counter opposition isn't even really get much of a say in the conversation. So in terms of what the voters are actually seeing, they're seeing a contest of three options, but they're all in the same column. So that's sort of showing up in the polls that there isn't much space for the Labour Party at the moment.
Well, it's not. It's got its own massive kind of rethink to do on its core policies. The Greens, we know, have had, and it's horribilis, I don't know how to pronounce that. But the other matter here, it's interesting you say that, because there was Roy Morgan out recently, and it's the only one I can think of recently, but it's worth a mention, that yes, the stability for the governing parties, relative stability in the polls so far this year, but the right track, wrong track look pretty ugly in that poll, Tim, and the government will be keeping an eye on that. That is often the dance partner that leads when it comes to polling.
Absolutely, and I think that though was a reflection of the economic circumstances, and you know the budget will have new economic forecasts, but the latest ones are sort of saying that they'll have no economic growth this year or very flat. And that means that people are really starting to feel the impact of those inflations. They're not, people aren't seeing new jobs being created, and those that's translating into confidence in the economy and confidence in the direction. So,
but I think it's also the blitzkrieg of announcements of cuts, and you know, the suicide prevention hotline unit, you know, which the National scrambled in the last week to try and save, is just another example of these cuts, which, you know, every day there's something new coming out, which, you know, is. Seen this, you know, 17-point drop. We haven't seen a drop on the right track, wrong track since the Auckland lockdown during the height of COVID. So there's that real sense that things aren't quite working at the moment.
But this is also a case of your opponents were suffering this when they're in government, and you were blaming them for what was happening. Now you're inheriting the mood that that Gareth was talking about. That Tim was talking about, which is also partly economic conditions. But it is. It is very much a leader of where the polls may go, so they will certainly have their eye on it. Tibby, wanted to bring up also just the Foreign Minister's trip to NATO in the US and some other matters. There. In foreign affairs, there's quite a bit, actually, that has unfolded fairly quietly, fairly under the radar so far this year, and in a reorientation again, or a strengthening of ties, particularly to traditional allies. Tim?
Yeah, I think it was very interesting that New Zealand is very close to having some sort of agreement with NATO, was announced by Peters. But at that meeting, you had quite an alignment of the democratic nations. There was a lot of interesting language really singling out what they call the authoritarian powers, Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and New Zealand's lining up firmly with the democratic powers. It's a very difficult world out there. We can see that with some of the cyber threat information we saw with the SVSB announcing that the Chinese had a good hard go at the parliamentary services computers. And I think it's really interesting now that New Zealand's going to have to really wake up what's going on out there. It's interesting that to me that Sweden has joined NATO, a country that was neutral for centuries. And they're waking up to the threat.
Well, it looks like pretty soon we should see Japan and Canada join the AUKUS Pillar 2. Looks pretty likely that New Zealand's going to join that. NATO is now rolling out this kind of Pacific Partnership Program, which it looks like we're going to join. And this has been the slow trend New Zealand's gone down maybe the last 5-10 years. Becoming part of what is essentially a Cold War style grouping of countries, as they, you know, as NATO themselves say, that China is a systemic challenger. And I think we're sort of rolling into it without a widespread national conversation, what this means for our independence, what this means for our nuclear policy and nuclear credentials. If we're part of AUKUS, you know, first and foremost, it is a nuclear deterrence program, even if we're not having nuclear submarines or having them in our ports. We haven't had this national conversation yet. We're de facto falling into this Cold War mentality and an alliance network.
All right. Thanks both very much. Gareth Hughes, Tim Hurdle.